Honorable members, the delegation from the department, shall we start with the business of the day. First quarter non-financial performance information.
Apologies for the Minister and the Deputy Minister who may arrive after they finish their business. Chair, we will be presenting the first quarter. We will cover both the financial and non-financial information for the first quarter. Just to create the context, as honourable members will remember, this is the first year in which we submitted separate EPPs and strategic plans for the department as it remains to be, and a separate one for the property management trading entity, PMTE. And it would have been the first time this year that we have done that for PMTE. In the process, we have attempted to align all and group together as distinct for forms, all those activities that now relate to the PMTE in that separate APP of the PMTE. I think as we did not realize, I think there were hidden problems in the separation of the two that are reflected in the manner in which the report will come for the first quarter. However, we regard those problems as just deepening problems which are going to be corrected as we go forward. And this will continue and commit ourselves to meeting our annual targets. And therefore, ensuring that as well, our operating model is appropriately adapted to reflect the change. Chair, I will, with your position, request the DDG for governance in the department, governance risk and compliance, Mr. Imtiaz Caesar, who will introduce himself, to deal with the non-financial information, and then the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Fox Mohoro, will then conclude and deal with the financial statements for both the PMTE and the DPW. I have also brought the newly appointed head. I think he's been to the committee once or twice, head of PMTE, and Mr. Paul Schrote along, and during the course of the year we will then be accounting together for the two entities. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, I've passed a few slides that cover the DG's introduction. I'd like to take the committee through the 5-year strategic goals and outcomes for the department. The vision of the department is a service-oriented public works gathering value and contributing to the national agenda, social and economic development. In this regard, our strategic goals and contributions to government outcomes are illustrated in the slide before you. And the 5 strategic goals on the slide include the first one, the efficient, competitive and responsive accommodation infrastructure network, and this is related to outcome 6. An efficient, competitive and responsive economic infrastructure network, and outcome 12, an efficient, effective and development-oriented public service and an empowered and inclusive citizenship. The next strategic goal is strategic leadership and regulation of the construction and property sectors to promote economic empowerment and skills development. Thus, in the NDSF, is related to outcome 5, a skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. Thirdly, good corporate governance to support effective and efficient service delivery, and this in the NDSF is linked to outcome 12, an efficient, effective and development-oriented public service and empowered, fair and inclusive citizenship. Fourthly, strategic goal is with an employment through inclusive economic growth, and it's linked to outcome 4 in the NDSF, which is with employment through inclusive economic growth. And lastly, contribution towards comprehensive rural development linked to outcome 7, The MTSF is contributing towards government's objective to develop rural areas. Chairperson and members of the committee, the minister during June 2014 established a scheme for the department to prepare strategic plans and annual performance plans of both department and the PMPE by announcing his policy statement, which guided the plan processes over the 5-year strategic plan, and identified 5 strategic priorities for the 5-year period ahead. In this regard, they include the creation of 6 million work opportunities through the Expanded Public Works Program. Secondly, the Minister requested the operationalization of the property management trading entity to manage the core business of departments, that is the custodianship of state immovable assets and the provision of accommodation to client departments, which are government departments. Thirdly, in an attempt to address governance challenges, the Minister decreed that we should operationalize the governance, risk and compliance branch personally to strengthen the fight against corruption in the department and P&T, as well as to spearhead the second phase of the turnaround, which is called efficiency enhancement, using mainly the tools of strategic planning, service delivery model improvement, and integrating risk and performance management in the department. The fourth priority is a policy review, working with all stakeholders, in particular the public works family in the provinces, to develop a new public works sector policy guideline, in essence reviewing the white paper, which is somewhat become outdated, and this process is intended to culminate in the Public Works Act to further refresh, clarify, and codify the mandate of the Department of Public Works. Number 5, the Minister made reference to the transformation of the built environment so that ownership, control, and the composition of the built environment professions better reflects the demographics of South Africa. And in this regard, the Department is expected to work closely with the public entities, in particular the CIPB and the Council for Built Environment. Chairperson, these priorities set a different thinking of the Department around the delivery mechanisms and targets of the Department, as well as the PMT. And in this regard, the Department at the time is moving from the stabilization phase of the turnaround into phase 2 of the turnaround, which is called efficiency enhancement. Chairperson, I'll go through to the next area, which is the non-financial performance information for DPW as well as PAT, and I'll commence first with the first program for DPW, which is administration. The sub-programs here are investigation services, finance and supply chain management, as well as corporate services. In this regard, the highlights for program 1 in DPW, the first item would be the reduction in the extent of irregular expenditure with 44%, again a target of 5%, the reduction of irregular expenditure baseline. Irregular expenditure has been one of the challenges of the Department for quite a length of time, and the efforts are being made to reduce this, and the Department is beginning to see a realization of those plans. Secondly is the payment of invoices within 30 days, which has become a significant challenge for departments, especially those such as public works with a national footprint. In this regard, 94% of compliant invoices settled within 30 working days. Chairperson, we make reference to the fact that compliant invoices were settled, given the fact that many invoices are not settled because they don't meet the requirements of the trade regulations before being settled as reliable and accepted documentation for purposes of payment. Moving to human resources, prioritized funded vacancies, 100% funded and prioritized vacancies were advertised as per the recruitment plan, 46 positions advertised, 103 appointments made, 20 promotions, 3 external transfers, 1 internal transfer, and 32 additional appointments. With regard to the skills development program, 1,237 beneficiaries participating in the skills program in the following areas: 90 in the young professionals program, 700 interns, 42 learnerships, 262 management trainees, and 133 artisans. Chairperson, moving on to the area of fraud and corruption, this is an area that we measure on our APT for regulatory reasons in particular, and also to demonstrate our commitment to investigating allegations of fraud and corruption within a short space of time. In this regard, during the first quarter, we received 9 allegations of fraud and corruption, all of which we commenced investigating within the required 30-day period. The Department's fraud prevention strategy, anti-corruption policy are also in place, and the whistleblowing policy has also been approved with the aim of encouraging whistleblowing on fraud and corrupt justice. With respect to fraud and corruption cases, 3 cases of reported fraud and corruption were also subject to disciplinary proceedings. So in essence, these 3 completed cases within the month were then submitted to our labor relations branch for the purpose of further disciplinary proceedings. Chairperson, can move on to program 2, which is the intergovernmental coordination program. This is a program that we are developing over a period of time. It is new. It is intended to enable the department to increase the intensity of the oversight and coordination of the public works sector as a whole. Over a period of time, as and when a public works act is developed, this particular measure will be further clarified. However, the department is on a trajectory, if one can call it that, to develop the sanctions at a greater level of intensity. The sub programs in this particular program are the intergovernmental relations and coordination functions, as well as monitoring and evaluation of the public works sector as a whole. Some of the highlights in this particular area is the extent to which we are beginning to drive accountability through what we call the Accountability Management Committee as a mechanism to enforce compliance. We've also conducted a new planning process. The EG mentioned in his opening remarks that the department for the first time is prepared annual performance plans and strategic plans for DPW separately from the PMDE, and this is why that has been one of our major initiatives to conduct a more sophisticated planning process for the 5-year period ahead for both DPWS and as well as PMDE. We've also conducted service delivery improvement planning and monitoring. We have a service delivery improvement plan in place, and we are establishing targets over the short and medium term for the purpose of service delivery improvement. We've also conducted quarterly monitoring and evaluation of organizational performance within DPW and PMT, and conducted operational and strategic risk management processes within the department as a whole. Chairperson and members of the committee, I move on to a program 3, which is the extended public works program, which is intended to ensure the creation of work opportunities and the provision of training for unskilled, marginalized, and unemployed people in the country by coordinating the implementation of the program. The department plays largely a policy coordinating function within the extended public works program within the rest of government. I believe my colleagues will perhaps add to this comment that I would like to make, in that the department experiences a number of challenges given that the expanded public works program is dispersed throughout government. So as a consequence, the monitoring and evaluation function and the collection of data is a significant challenge. My colleague, Mr. Hanson, will expand on that a little later. With respect to highlights and achievements, and Chairperson will often highlight an achievement and also speak about challenges under this particular panel. With respect to work opportunities, 222,564 out of the reported 300,000 work opportunities that were reported on the system and aligned to the EPWP business plan for phase 3 of EPWP. With respect to these work opportunities, a total of 183,609 work opportunities, which translate into 19,868 full-time equivalents, were created with respect to rural municipalities using the labourly intensive approach of PWP in terms of its business plan. In this regard, the introduction of the new reporting system has seen slow reporting by many public bodies. However, training is continuous and an attempt is being made by the department to ensure that the reporting bodies improve the nature, the timing and accuracy of data being forwarded to the National Department of Public Works. With respect to training, a total of 1,428 learners have been trained through the National Skills Fund. Chairperson, if I go too far, we highlighted the numbers in the previous bulletin, right, because we submitted them, they changed, so we are just highlighting that. With respect to beneficiaries trained, a total of 1,438 learners have been trained through the National Skills Fund. It's reported that the overachievement in the number of participants, it's largely to various approved procurement models currently being used for contracting. Moving over to Program 4, the construction, property and construction industry related policy regulations. This program promotes the growth and transformation of the construction and property industries, promoting uniformity and best practices in the construction sector, as well as removal of asset management practices in that particular sector. And I'd like to mention the fact that the department works closely with the Construction Industry Development Board to achieve a number of the objectives of this program. The program ensures transformation of regulation of the construction sector and industry to ensure economic growth and development. And we also like to mention that with respect to the regulatory function of this particular program, there are dependencies in the value chain on parliamentary processes and on the right when legislation is brought to co-parliament. We are often experienced challenges in this particular area, which are often dependent on the parliamentary program. With respect to what we've done in the quarter, Public Works Friday for Research Program identified fields to be undertaken in this particular quarter. Progress has been made, but full swing research has not been completed as yet. The bulk meant the disposal of immovable assets under the custodianship of the department. The department has developed a draft discussion document for consultation with stakeholders in this quarter, and further processing of the draft will commence with the inclusion of inputs from other stakeholders. With respect to the Public Works General Law Amendment and Repeal Law, significant progress has been made in this regard. The setting of the bill will take place after scrutiny by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Program 5, which is a prestige program within the DPW, program architecture. This particular program sets policy, norms, and standards for the provision of prestige accommodation and meets the protocol responsibilities for state functions. Chairperson and members of the committee, I'd like to mention that in our personal model, the PMT would assume responsibility for the actual delivery within the framework established by DPW under Program 5. In this regard, with respect to policy guidance on installation, management and maintenance of security infrastructure at metal key points, a draft policy guideline has been completed. With respect to the level agreement for the presidency, this has also achieved a milestone and been completed in draft form for the discussion. Secretary three clients and public works tenants and norms, we regret to report that the no research report on this has been completed as yet, is still in progress. With respect to prestige events, 4 of 6 events supported with a movable infrastructure. One large event was postponed to 15th of September 2015, and could not be served as a result. Chairperson, that concludes the performance information for the Department of Public Works and its five programs. I move over to the Profit Management Trading Entity. This is new. It's the first time that the DG mentioned that we are reporting the PMT separately from the DPW. Program 1 is administration. Some in many respects to the DPW and deals mainly with corporate services, finance and supply chain management. The highlights include the debtors balance. Debtors and the members of the policy as you'll be aware, PMT carries a huge account receivable balance and this is something that the department considers important to measure as well as manage the debtors balance and accounts receivable balance within the PMT. In this regard, 65.5% against the target 60% of invoices issued during this quarter were collected within 60 days. This has been a significant achievement by the PMT to ensure that it does not run bank overdrafts and mentions accounts receivable. With respect to payment of invoices within 30 days, 73% compliant invoices were settled within 30 working days. As my colleagues took their effort to submit information, they considered it important not as a compliance requirement only, but also as a means to strengthen and empower suppliers and their participation in boosting the economy, especially the small and medium enterprises. Moving over to Program 2. Program 2 is made up of 4 sub-programs, which is user demand management, which we call key town management in the past, planning and precinct developer services, property performance management, as well as investment management. Chairperson and members of the committee in this regard, with respect to user demand management, What we are seeking to do is tell a client needs to have a comprehensive knowledge of client requirements in line with their service delivery priorities. The intention is to project demand going forward so that we can better understand client needs and utilize our existing stock before considering options of extensive leasing in arrangements. Now we use the department framework to conclude for the use of real property in the first quarter, and this is currently in progress. With respect to planning and precinct development services, plan and develop integrated government precincts in urban and rural areas, including planning the development of harbors for improved government accommodation and enhanced service delivery and service. Preliminary investment decisions. 80% of decisions against a target of 75% was approved within a 3-month period from the date of the request. In this regard, there were eight requests to approve out of 10, and 9 backlog investment decisions were completed in the first quarter. There are certain targets which we are unable to report on because requests are not received. In terms of investment solutions for construction within a stipulated period, no investment solutions were concluded. No requests, we have operations PISA on the plan as well, and no requests for operations PISA initiatives were received within the first quarter, so they were none to approve. Similarly, no request fishing harbour infrastructure was received, in fact, not just the first quarter, but also the first for the past 9 months. Program 3, real estate investment, and this relates to construction management. We have two sub-programs here, construction project planning and construction project management. This is the branch dealing with construction, specifically the delivery of infrastructure through construction. With respect to work opportunities created through construction projects, 3,841 work opportunities were created against a target of 2,000 through construction projects. This was due to the increased recruitment rate of EPWP beneficiaries on our construction projects. Completed projects within agreed construction period, this is another target. 23 against 16 targeted projects were completed within agreed construction period. This is demonstrated an improving level of efficiency in terms of time for completion projects. With respect to completed projects within approved budget, 23 projects against the 16 targeted projects were completed within the budget. It reflects an improved level of efficiency in the management of construction and department. Chairperson, members of the committee, I run program 4, which talks to real estate, the purpose of which is to provide and manage suitable accommodation for clients to meet their own service delivery objectives as a result of the accommodation we provide. These programs in this regard include management of freehold property, land administration and management, service freehold revenue management, and leasehold management. Some of the items include the following. With respect to lease agreement review, 99% of lease agreements have been reviewed according to the rental rate per square meter as well as escalations. Lease renewed before the expiry date. 40% of leases were renewed before expiring date, again, 25% target per quarter. With respect to lease accommodation as well, 28% of the target of 42% lease accommodation, which is leasing in, was provided to clients within a 3-time frame. Surplus freehold land, 75 or 25% of 300 parcels of freehold property were allocated towards SCOBE purposes. With respect to Program 5, Program 5 is for a long name in the new program budget architecture of the department, but it relates to the immovable asset register of the department. The intention, and there's a lot of data there, the intention is to develop ultimately an accurate immovable asset register to serve as a basis for portfolio planning and investment management departments. And there are two sub-programs in this regard. The first one is to the asset registry services, which is the creation of the accurate asset register, and the second is conveyancing. Chairperson, I must say as a prelude to our lack of achievement in this area in the first quarter, that 99.1% of the immovable asset register at 31st March 2015 was physically verified. However, in the first quarter, we made little progress in verifying the further assets that were identified from a physical verification point of view, mainly due to the fact that the program directed towards physical verification is still in the planning stages. With respect to verification of assets, with respect to conveyancing, with respect to postal reserves, we have not achieved our targets in the first quarter due to the fact that this particular area is in the planning stage. Program 6, the facilities management function within the PNC. Chairperson, members of the committee, the purpose of this program is to ensure the maintenance and quality of our buildings, to ensure that assets used by government departments as well as the public are optimally utilized and maintained in a safe ergonomic environment, as well as to create jobs within this particular area. This particular area of facilities management is very amenable to job creation, particularly within the unskilled area. So, skill development and poverty elimination are areas we target within Program 6, Facilities Management. Sub-programs include scheduled maintenance, self-management, and unscheduled maintenance. Sure, safety, health, and environmental regulations. In this area, some of the highlights include 18,000 kilowatt reduction in the usage on energy consumption. In the water consumption area, we have not achieved our targets due to the fact that this program with respect to water saving is also in progress. And as DG mentioned, we plan to achieve our annual targets within this particular area, as well as other areas. With respect to unscheduled maintenance, we achieved 3% efficiency or turnaround time for unscheduled maintenance on freehold property within 5 days. Work opportunities created through maintenance programs, 1,950 work opportunities were created through maintenance programs between DPW and ENTE with respect to facilities management. Some of the performance challenges of Chairperson and members of the committee within DPW as well as PNTE is that we do have challenges within the SCF area appointing service providers, especially when we're dealing with care fields. Those have delays in programs and results in underperformance. It's something we need to manage more seriously, and my colleagues will add to some of the challenges by talking about some of the reforms that are being undertaken within the SCN environment. In areas where there are dependencies on external stakeholder departments, we've also identified the need to improve the liaison and the relationship with these stakeholders. They also result in a delay in the achievement of our targets, especially within the policy and legislation areas. Some of those are beyond our control, but on a general level, we need to improve our management and stakeholder management and relationships with external stakeholders. Capacity and budget constraints in some areas also continue to be a hindrance on performance. An example includes the facilities management contracts and impediments continuing to increase. Efforts are also being made to reach the energy and water efficiencies and waste management as part of the Green Building program. And generally, there are challenges with respect to the business model of the value chain within the department. And this requires a review of these individual value chains so that we have an integrated business model and avoid fragmentation and duplication within our very own department and within the PNC in particular to ensure that we have great efficiencies and are able to harness our resources in the department as a whole. Chairperson, to emphasize this point, that increased drive toward the achievement of EPWP targets that cuts across various units in the department. We also need to show a greater level of collaboration as the department leading the Expanded Public Works program. This is a particular area where we need to ensure that within our very own department, we harness the opportunity to create jobs given that we are an infrastructure department and there are opportunities to do this, and we need to carefully analyze the extent to which we've been approaching this particular challenge. Chairperson and members of the committee, as you are aware, we are also implementing the turnaround strategy in the department. We've concluded phase one of the turnaround, which is called the stabilization, and we are currently moving into phase two, the efficiency enhancement phase. Even if some of the programs in phase one will continue into phase two, we continue with phase one stabilization into phase two. However, the department is now gradually moving into developing new service delivery models and reviewing the manner in which you conduct business, and my colleagues will also deal with us in the question and answer session. Therefore, we are continuing engagement with contractors and setting parameters for non-performance. This is an area that caused the department significant delays in the delivery of infrastructure projects. We often find contractors go out of business, contractors fail to deliver, and in this regard, we need to conduct more detailed and stringent risk management processes when we appoint contractors, and also conduct a higher quality of project management in this particular regard. Chairperson, as a whole, we also have our organizational structure for DPW and PMG reaching finality, and as a consequence of our new service delivery model of having a separate property management trading entity from the policy and aid functions of the department, the organizational structure too will make a significant contribution of verifying the roles and responsibilities and is on the cusp of being finalized and implemented in a step. We also have greater accountability through governance structures in the department. We have formulated a new governance risk and compliance branch. And what the branch has done is to create a greater focus on good governance and good practices, as well as compliance, better planning, more intensive monitoring of performance, greater fight against corruption, and also integration of risk management within our planning processes. So we are trying to focus on an increasing level on dealing with issues of governance and accountability in the department as well, in an attempt to improve organizational performance. Chairperson, if I can lay to this particular busy slide for a moment, this formed the basis of our new organizational structure, as well as the development of the business operating and service delivery models within the department itself, as well as the PFE. What it does is it shows the key services rendered by the department, first of all. I think one of the concerns expressed by the PSA before they consider any organizational structure is to watch out for departments who are delivering unfunded mandates or delivering unmandates and utilizing treasury funding that they have no mandate. And what this slide does is to show that the department is essentially only rendering service in terms of law, in terms of Kiyama, in terms of cabinet decisions and other policies, and there are no services which have been delivered by the department that is not mandated. And this forms the basis for defining the key groups within the department and how they interface and interact with each other, and then give rise to our service delivery model, our metro service delivery model, as well as the development of organizational structure. As you can see, at the center, Kiyama is the heart of what we do. And the immovable asset management business, the EPWP on the other side, the construction and property sectors on the left, and how we contribute to the various outcomes of government. And using this as a basis, we then develop the organizational structure, which my colleague DC Corporate Services will speak about in a few moments. And we use that effect as a basis as well to develop a service delivery model going forward. And in terms of that service delivery model, DPW focuses on policy, and the regulation of the construction and property sectors, the norms and standards within the prestige environment, and the coordination of the extended public works program on the one hand. On the other hand, we have the property management trading entity, which conducts the property business and property management department. Chairperson, I thank you, and I will pass over to my colleague, the CFO, Mr. Mahor. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I shall take us through the financial performance of the department at PMTE. You may proceed. I was just thinking, members. The first portion of the presentation and contribution has been quite loaded with information. So I was wondering if it would not be appropriate to first take a question and comment on that particular section before we move to the financials in greater detail. I'll be guided by you. You seem to be nodding in assent. Mr. Sutton? I will agree with you in this instance, and I'm sure my colleagues will too.
Thank you.
Shall we do so? The opportunity is now for members to pose questions and make their respective comments. Honorable Frey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I think it's a good idea to split this up because I'm for certain, for one, I've got a number of questions on the first part. Let's start at the beginning, Program 1 Administration. Payment of invoices within 30 days. It says 94% of compliant invoices were settled. But don't say talk about the non-compliant invoices and exactly what are they and how many are they and why don't they comply. So I've got to, if you can clarify that. Then second question on the same page, prioritized funded vacancies. Now because of the economic situation and I think the Minister of Finance said that we're not going to fill all vacancies, it's got to be frozen as part of a belt tightening exercise. So I want to ask funded vacancies prioritized. How did you prioritize and did you take into account this directive from the Minister from Treasury? Fraud and corruption. I know the department has really been struggling with fraud and corruption. That's the one department, really out of many, but the one that has been particularly was struggling under serious fraud and corruption. I remember when I just first came into this committee, the previous, well, the an acting director general before the current permanent appointment, in her first presentation to the committee, she actually said to us, members would be shocked if they knew the true extent of fraud and corruption in this department. She talked about the width as well as the depth of fraud and corruption in this department. So this is a very important issue. I really want to focus on that. They talk about investigations initiated within 30 days, 100%, 9 out of 9 investigations finalized. Now, it just sounds, this figure, I've got a big question mark there. 9 out of 9, only 9 cases. How many others? Considering the words of the previous acting director general, the width and the depth, that we would be shocked. I can't believe this is 9 out of 9. If you can clarify that, the same for the next point on that same page, fraud and corruption cases, 100%, 3 out of 3 cases reported. Can you please further clarify those because they look very suspect to me. Mr. Chair, then a couple of pages further on. Page 14 on the EPWP, work opportunities. A total of 6,900 out of a target of 300,000 work opportunities were created. If you could also clarify that figure to me, are you talking about national? Are you talking about various provinces or local? It sounds, that figure doesn't make sense to me. I think some municipalities or metros, for example, I know the Metro of Cape Town, they alone may well have created 6,900 work opportunities. So where does this figure come from? Can you just put into more context for me? That figure doesn't make sense to me at all. Prestige Policy Program 5, Mr. Chairman. Service level agreement, a draft for the president is being completed. Is this a separate one under service a prestige project? Why is a separate one just for the presidency? Doesn't it apply for all prestige projects? Then under that same on the same page, prestige events supported movable infrastructure. One was postponed to a later date. I think funerals, state funerals fall under this point. If I'm mistaken, please tell me where it does fall, but I want to ask about state funerals. Last time I was on this committee, and that's about 2 years ago, there was a policy being developed for state funerals. Has that policy been finalized, and do we now have a policy? If so, can you please make a copy available to this committee? I'm not done yet, Mr. Chairman, if you could just bear with me. Property in foreign countries, that's program 2, real estate investment page 22. You talked about the cost effective accommodation. I just want to ask about property in foreign investment. When you say the immovable asset management register has been completed 99%, does this include the foreign properties in foreign countries? so confused about the property, the asset management register. And one question that I've asked, and you say that 99% been completed. But then, for example, you talk about verification of assets on page 29. 0% of real estate assets verified in this quarter. And 0% of real estate transactions conveyed within 130 days. 0% of coastal reserves under the custodianship has been met. So if it's been not been met and some haven't been verified, how can you actually achieve a 99% asset management register? So I need further clarification on the progress of that asset management register. Mr. Chairman, I think that's enough for now. I'll provide opportunities for the other members.
Honourable Member, thank you very much. The next member, Honourable Zita.
Thank you, sir. I will start off on page 33. I've looked at the comments there. I've been coming to the specific questions, but I will start off with my comments on what is contained in page 33. My general take of the contents of the page is that the department has, for reasons not to its chosen to give us a general overview in a critical area where one would have wanted in fact check is to be specific. General overview has given us the impression that there are changes to critical matters. Beautiful choice of words, increased drive. We would speculate what is meant by increased drive. Continuous engagement. We have no idea what that means. Ongoing engagement with what results? Continued engagement, different from continuous. Understanding that continuous means non-stop. They change the tune and say continued, which means there are breaks in between. Engagement, still the same words. Significant progress, that's bullet point number 4. What does significance mean? From what base are you moving? And by what percentage we are left to speculate when you say significant, which could very well be a subjective statement in its own. We want a specific, answer. Greater accountability, greater, greatest. Where do we stand exactly when you say greater than what? We have got no point of reference. This is the point I'm trying to stress check, that there's no point of reference. You've given us the report, which in some instances is specific. You've given us percentage, something that we really appreciate. But when you just say greater improvements, significant improvements, continuous engagement, where does that leave us? You are not enabling us to do what we are here to do. Please be specific. Let's come to the actual questions. Question 1. Decent employment. That's in your opening statement. I'm not sure you've ever been given a definition in this context of what you mean by decent. Does it relate to the amount of time that an employee spends in a given job, where you would say, decent because it's a 5-year contract, or does it relate to the time someone who is an administrator, who is in a white-collar job, is different from someone, who is not in a white-collar job? What do you mean by decent? That's the point that I'm referring to when I say, give us point of reference so that we can understand what you mean when you say we have improved. Number 2. Transformation in the business environment. We a couple of weeks back, we did see the plans from CIDB. Now, we did make suggestions for them. I was hoping that when you come this time round, you would be referring to that. But there doesn't seem to be a link between what they're doing and what you are reporting on. And the fact you are constrained to make, constructive advice. There are specific advices that we shared with them, and I thought that because there has been a late time of about a month, you would refer to that. There seems to be a gap. We need that information. We spoke about things like unbundling the big contracts. a billion-pound contract given issued by government, how do you factor in your grade 3 contractor such that we can see transformation because we want it? But you are not, you're shy when it comes to giving a specific exactly how you are tackling that as a department. You see what CID is doing, but you don't know if you are together. Number three, on page 9, great to see those skill development figures, but is there a follow through of decent employment when those people get trained? Because my understanding is that there are millions and millions of people who are toiling the streets in South Africa who are so grateful that they've been trained under the EPW program, but they have got no jobs. To what extent are you able to absorb your own training? Next question, on page 14. The average time of employment that people enjoy under EPW program. You know, when the budget was tabled and supported, I did say to the minister that my understanding is that these are very, very temporary jobs. The reason I'm coming back to your decision is because time and time again, Chair, we hear in the media that people have got their own interpretation of the length of time that they are supposed to stay. And there are strikes, and strikes demand police action. So more people now, other stakeholders, are drawn into their own program. I will say, no, no, we promised permanent jobs. You can't tell us that these are, you know, temporary jobs. To what extent do the employers with local government and so on understand that these jobs are temporary if they are? That's why I would like to know. The second last question. Very critical, page 23, you remarked that you did not get any request on Pakeza as well as the, you know, fishing their harbors. Why are you expecting them? Because earlier you reported to us that there is coordination of your efforts with other stakeholders, and I assume that these are, you know, departments that have been needing your services. The fact that you tell us that you didn't get, you know, any request implies that you were expecting. Why were you expecting and they given you any reason? Because I imagine a situation when I would go to the third and fourth quarter, you'd be saying whatever resources you have set aside to support the program have not been expanded because no request came. And this is not what we want to see. My last question is page 32. What efforts have been made to assess a thing? You know, and is this a reflection of your plan that you've got the kind of scenario that you have set out in page 32, where you say that there were challenges with the appointment of service providers in areas where skills are required. My assumption is that when you make an appointment, you would have assessed first the suitability of a given, you know, suitability as well as the ability of a given service provider to deliver on a given task. In other words, the skills would have been tabulated and then you give them the letter of appointment. Now, does this occur before you do the appointments or does it occur, you know, during implementation of the given program? We're trying to identify the exact location of the program, of the problem, so that we can be of help. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Bye.
Honourable Member, thank you very much. Just to note that the others were raised their hands to comment. I just want to exemplifying a certain aspect that Mr. Sudani has referred to. Page 9, the first point there, in regard to the reduction of irregular expenditure. What is referring to, you don't give any facts and figures there, to expatiate in regard to the first point. But then the other point, the follow, you are able to give facts and figures there. So then the question rises there, why the silence in regard to the first point, where you are not able to support the facts and figures. Thus, when it goes to
page 32 rather, the issue in regard to state skills. For people who are not seized with the information on a day-to-day basis, if you refer to state skills, what state skills? If you are able to give examples, it would be more clear to members of the portfolio what are the challenges facing in that regard. The next member was Honorable Sitole.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. My Chairperson, what I want to understand on page 5, the creation of 6 million work opportunities through EPWP. How many were temporary and how many were full-time jobs? When they talk about 6,000 jobs, 6 million jobs. And the other question is that one of capacity. What I want to understand from the department, what mechanism do they have to pick up the capacity? Because they only see there is no capacity. When you check on page 32, they talk about capacity that it hinders your customers. And the other one, Chairperson, is that one of I didn't hear about the entities, because I have a concern about IDT. Because if you check the IDT, so it's supposed to be self-sustaining, sustainable now, because it is the schedule 2. Now they're supposed to have their own sustainability, but they are still getting a lot of money from this department. The other one, Chairperson, is that one from page 8. My concern, Chairperson, is that transferring of programs, immovable assets, because before it was immovable asset management, now it's intergovernmental coordination. I don't know, I'm still staying in an old age, because I want to understand actually the figure that the government has on this intergovernmental coordination, because I know before it was immovable asset management. How many?
Honorable Sitole, for a moment you had me worried that you are staying in an old home.
And then the last of Chairperson is that one of work opportunity. The answer that was 300,000, but they achieved only 6,900. What are the decisions? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. The following member was Honorable Mrs. Adams.
Dankie voorzitter, ek het gedink my speer kom nooit nie. My eerste vraag begin op bladsy 5, page 5. You say the Minister's policy statement has 5 priorities, strategic priorities. Now, priority number 4, I'd like to know, you say that there is a public work sector policy guideline white paper culminating, you are working with the provinces. I would have loved you to put time frames in. You see, this must be our baseline for quarter 2, quarter 3, and quarter 4 reports. So, when you change your quarter 2 report, we must have a baseline for where we work. And then, Chairperson, priority number 5, the transformation of the public environment. You know, Chairperson, 21 years in our democracy, we don't want to hear that as an excuse. We must see the transformation. We must not actually see it, we must feel it. How far have you gone in this process with the stakeholders, such as GIDB? Then program 1, Chairperson. I've spoken on a previous occasion about this, page 9, slide 9. Reduction of irregular expenditure. You say there's a reduction of 44% against a 5% target. Now, Jay, how on earth can the department set such a low target? Do they don't have confidence that they will reach a higher target? 5% against a rich target of 44%. I think they must look at the target seekers. And I would like to know, Chairperson, what are maatstaven are that we're using to set targets?
Steps
are they taking? Thank you. Now, still on page slide 9, the payment of invoices within 30 days, that is good, 94%, that is very good. What have you done with the other 6%? Have you followed it up? Now, Jefferson, for me, that third bullet prioritized funded vacancies. 100% funded and prioritized vacancies advertised as per recruitment plan. 100% funded and prioritized vacancies. Now, 46 positions advertised, 103 appointments made, out of what? Out of how many vacancies? 20 promotions, 3 external transfers, where do you internal, I understand. 32 additional appointments. Where are they funded for? Where are they funded for? Again, Jefferson, on the skills development program, and every time I'm talking about this, explain to me development program in the following areas, 90 young professionals, 180%. How come? What? You must be very specific. You must always move from the premises that the people that you present to doesn't know, doesn't have background knowledge, Jefferson, sorry, teachers. You say you have 700 interns. What is your plan with the interns? Do they have an internship of 1 or 2 years and what happens after that? Do you employ them? Because that is the way we'll have the necessary capacity and skills if you employ our interns. In Jefferson, I'd also like to know about the investigations. The department can tell us more about some of the cases, 9 out of 3 cases, what was the graad van die oortreders. And Jefferson, program 2.
Member is saying, what's the extent of the transgression?
Then Jefferson on slide 14. Again, the EPWP, there was an overachievement. What is an overachievement? Of what? Again, Jefferson, too low target setting. Now we come and talk about overachievement related good. The Jefferson slide 16, again, time frames there. There is a lot set. Time frames, when will it be done? Then a previous speaker spoke on slide 18 that a salary and associated services, prestige norms, no research report, why is, if the, the, you are busy with the report, state it, of how far you are. Then Jefferson, on slide 21, debtors balance collected within 16 days, my payment of invoices are within 30 days. Why do you say, don't we stay with 30 days? Why 60 days for the debtors to pay and 30 days for? Please explain that to me. Then Jefferson, every year we have a sauna. And in the sauna, specifically mentioned Operation Pakisa. That's your baby department of public works. If you didn't receive any requests, why didn't you go out to find out why municipalities and other role players didn't send in requests Perhaps they had capacity problems. But this is your flagship program named by the president of this country. Then Jefferson, again, slide 25, made a note here, targeting. Second block, completed projects with a deconstruction, 23 against 16 sites. I would like to know why you're targeting so low. If you could look much better, if you said 20 and you are finished 20. Now on slide 27, highlights and achievements of program 4. They say surplus freehold, 75 or 25 of 300 surplus freehold property allocated towards BBBE. Now, don't say to me I don't have the correct documents, I don't have this. What are you doing? What are you doing to say out the BBBE people? Jefferson highlights an achievement on program 5, again, the same thing. All real estate transactions conveyance within 118 days, I know there is a shortage of skills. But what are we doing to curb that shortage? We can't have every year a shortage of skills as a reason for not doing what we must do. Then Jefferson, slide 31, South Africa has a water scarce land. And every department must save a drop of water. You can't come and say to us water consumption, not reduction in kiloliter usage achieved. You can't come and say this to us. We must be models, role models, of saving of electricity and water. And Jefferson, I conclude. I want to emphasize what the Honorable Fultani said on the page 32 and 33. I don't want to go in there, but I'd like the department to give us a chance. And for me, Jefferson, you can't come and say here, performance challenges, Department of Public Works and PMTE. What would be our baseline here for PMTE? Give us your challenges, please. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, honorable member. The department can be crucified for many things, but I must say that the department is not solely responsible for Operation Pakiza. It's a multidisciplinary project to unlock the ocean economy. So to assist the coastal communities, skills development, so all departments have a responsibility there to contribute as best as they can to realize the potential as to what government envisages for that program. Mayor Marciana.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And also thank the department for the presentation that we've got this morning. The first one, I think it has already been asked about the 30 days payment period, which I just wanted to say, because this is it's very important for us as a department to make sure that we are also complying 100%. And at the same time, we are having those clients that could not or are unable to comply with the necessary requirements. What are we doing as a department to try and assist them so that at the end of the day, it benefits both of the department and the clients themselves, so that we are going to get a 100% in future, because that is what we want. That was on page 9. And on page 13, about expanded work, public work program. As one is moving around in the provinces, we realize that many of these projects have been have been stopped somehow. Not that they have completed, they have not completed the work, but it is not, they are discontinued. I don't know why I have been discontinued some of those projects in the provinces. Is it because maybe there's no money or what? I really don't understand. I don't know. For example, you father said the road, which is too bushy on the side. As they were doing that, the movie was deep bushing it, they stopped somewhere. And that was a good project, because one is able, when you're traveling that road, you're able to see animals from a distance. But somehow they stopped, and I think they were supposed to continue, because it's a very good project. On page 14, under the highlights and achievements, the first two bullets, I did not really understand the expansion thereof. Can you please clarify it again? Under highlights and achievements, the first two bullets. Then on page 29, where we talk about the verification of assets, we have reported zero percentage, all of them, all the three. And we are saying it is because they are still at the planning stage. Why are we still at the planning stage? Couldn't we have done this earlier so that by this time we are able to report something that has been done? On page 32, I think also honorable members discussed the issue of capacity, which is a constraint to the department. I think it is a good thing that we are able to realize that capacity is a problem to us, or is a challenge to us. But what are we doing about this one here? So that we address the issue, and we don't have to report about the capacity year in and year out. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members, the department, director general, and GDGs, who gave a very intensive amount of information. So the members have interacted with the presentation made. Your time for a rejoinder, good folks.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, there are quite a few questions. Some almost reinforcement of the other plus some comments. I'm going to ask my colleagues to speak with the work, and then I will deal with whatever remains. Starting with matters that relate to corruption, fraud, and governance, I'll ask the DDG to respond to. And then DDG Henderson will respond to the EPWP matters. The CFO will deal with all matters that relate to financially related information, even though we have not reached that, because in the targets there were issues that relate to that. I will address the issues that deal with that relates to the policy, including the targets and the timelines that relate to that. Can I ask my colleagues to? And then
the other colleague on assets, HR instantiation,
they will pick up
those. Just make it. Let's start with the governance.
Chairman, the question on the fraud and corruption was...
You may switch off your microphone, Mr. Director.
Chairman, the question on fraud and corruption was raised by two members, and the APP is limited to reporting at what transpires in headquarters. The 19 was reported, and all comments within 30 days, but that's not a reflection of the extent of the investigation of fraud and corruption in the department. I can say that over the last 5 years, we've investigated more than 300 cases, and I'm speaking in an approximate way because I don't have the figures in front of me. I can get it in a few minutes if I need to. But we investigating fraud and corruption at a very intense level. In fact, we have at least 4 proclamations with the special investigating group, the SIU. The one proclamation talks to the investigation of irregular leases that we refer to that as the Public Works Department as a result of the findings of our own business process management within the leasing area. We discovered a number of leases that we were not happy with that were concluded many years ago, and we referred all those leases to SIU. The result has been a proclamation on the investigation of leases. We also have a proclamation issued by the President to investigate the refurbishment of 14 or 16 ministerial houses in Cape Town, which is the information is public knowledge. And then thirdly, the first proclamation of the SIU of 2010 was recently extended because it expired in 2012. So that covers general procurement in the department. At this moment in time, I would suggest that there are multiple investigations being conducted by the SIU in the department. And that stops short of talking about what we do ourselves. We have a dedicated anti-corruption unit. And the anti-corruption unit has a holistic anti-corruption strategy which starts with prevention. That is critical. We don't investigate cases after fraud has been perpetrated, but prevention is critical in our strategy. But moving to investigations, at this particular moment in time, I would estimate that at least 75 to 80 investigations are on the go. And that doesn't talk to the fact that we completed another 150 in the last 18 months. And as a consequence of this, I would say that more than 100 members of staff have gone through disciplinary proceedings, which have been concluded. The sanctions range from written warnings, final warnings, dismissals, and the like, and also a number of referrals to the chefs where fraud and corruption have been detected. In fact, if I was not to take up too much time to answer this particular question, I can say that in the last week, our anti-corruption unit has successfully prosecuted somebody for corruption, and that is unprecedented. We will usually find a defendant guilty of maladministration in a department. But fraud and corruption is usually only proven by the SIU and the police because they have the tools to do it. But the anti-corruption unit has had a successful case of corruption in the last week. So there's a high level of intensity towards dealing with those concerns that one of the members made reference to. The former DG appeared and spoke about the chronic problem of fraud and corruption. It is a problem because of the susceptibility of construction and leasing to fraud and corruption. People collude and systems are often poor. But the department has made huge strides in the last few years in dealing with this problem. We're not suggesting that we've eliminated it, but we're well on our way to keeping this in check and eliminating it over time. So that's the answer on fraud and corruption. We'll never respect the intensity of fraud and corruption cases, or at least the nature of the allegation. The question was put about the nature of the transgression. One cannot tell precisely until the investigation is completed, but there is a tendency that internally you normally investigate maladministration, serious maladministration. When you detect criminality, you are compelled to refer it to the police. And the more serious cases are then assumed by the SIU and the intercepts commercial criminals. So that's the nature of fraud and corruption. Some of the other questions that relate to me, Chairperson, is the IDT and the sustainability of the IDT. I know my CFO will also want to address this issue. The IDT is undergoing an organizational review at this time under the direction of the Deputy Minister. In the current financial year, the IDT will be receiving its last transfer of public funds, and it will have to then sustain itself going forward. And at this moment in time, the IDT is developing a new business and financial model for this particular purpose to review its sustainability going forward as well as its organizational form and the like, and transforming the manner in which it operates. Moving on to the other questions, Program 2 is the part of the asset management and now intergovernmental coordination. This is part of our new program by the structure when we separated DPW, PMC's business from DPW. In essence, PMC is to sit mainly in Program 2 of the DPW. That's out. We now have PMC in its own budget structure, and the new Program 2 has now been the intergovernmental coordination. So it's due to the separation that we have another program. Chairperson, the request to provide timeline on the white paper is noted. We will, in our quarter two report, respond to that and provide timelines with respect to development of the white paper. I think, Chairperson, I've covered my hands. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Thank you, Chair and honourable members. Maybe just to follow up on the comments by my colleague on the IPG. Yeah, it is quite the last tranche of support, financial support to the IPG happened this current year. A grant of 15 million rands or transfer of 15 million rands to the IPG to meet its operating expenses. The business case for sustainability going forward of the IPG is predicated on the IPG charging a management fee for the program for managing the process on behalf of departments. To that extent, and to support them being able to do that, National Treasury has issued a practice note which then requests departments that engage IDT to pay a management fee based on a sliding scale depending on the level and quantum of the actual project itself, that's how it will work. So ideally, I think IDT will, it seems a very difficult time for them this year, given that the level of assets of the department actually pays on the historical and practices of not paying for services of the IDT, it requires a complete program shift on behalf of the inside of the department. So it's going to be a bit of a challenge because there's been a very sluggish uptake of this director of professional treasury for the charging of management fees. So within 8 years, I think we will keep monitoring the financial affairs of IDT in the year to see where the actual pressures are. However, in terms of what they reported last year, the progress seemed to be quite positive in terms of their progression this year that we will, in a way, manage somehow. But we'll keep this very close to our radar. Sorry.
I think as we were concluding the discussions on their model, one of the things that the department is that given that we're running a huge portfolio of projects at any one point in time, we will utilize IDG and allocate the sufficient number of projects that they will be able to implement as an accommodation to our capacity to deliver on those projects so that we will be shortening the period of implementation of those projects and increase our ability to supervise and inspect the process when they're implemented. The other advantage we have with ICT is that there's an increasing trend that is beginning to show whereby if you are implementing a project, even if it's a government project in a particular environment, if you miss dealing with community engagement at the point of planning, advocacy, explanation, agreeing on issues, you get challenged in the implementation of the project. And that project can be blocked for all over here at one point because you have to sort out issues, those issues that you ought to have sorted out before you started, including local employment of local labor, local material, local contractors, etc. in the process. And ICT, honorable members, have proven in many cases that they are capable of dealing with issues. They have been doing it over a period of time. So we utilize their strength to ensure that we succeed in the implementation of our project.
I just continue on the regular expenditure, the question on the regular expenditure. Why we set a target of 5% and that is over achieved, and what is the actual baseline? You'll recall in the prior we had supported quite a large number in terms of irregular expenditure in the main boat to the extent of about 568 million rands that we had in the final accounts of the main boat. Of that, the 94%, the 44% is to the code of one performance in terms of the reduction of that balance, using that as a benchmark. What we did is we were running a program of investigating the irregular expenditure, and we realized as we were running the program for the investigation in terms of the process of dealing with the irregular expenditure, that in actual fact, a lot of the
basis of the irregularity that we reported to the legislature was as a result of just non-compliance with certain documentation. When we investigated this, we actually found the documents are for really digging, like documents that say, to give an example, your tax certificate. So a lot of the transactions were actually in that category. And we found the documentation, and that's how we managed to reduce the illegal expenditure to the extent that we've done, based on the fact that the basis of the irregularity itself was no longer an issue. And there are still, you know, about 248 million rands of just doing almost bulk condonement in terms of the issue that related to that irregularity that arose. So that's where it came from. The thinking when the target was set was that, as you understand, the process of investigation can be quite a laborious process. So we are fairly conservative, not realizing that in actual fact that those very easy things. I think now that we moved on to the next quarter and we're going to get into other levels of investigations beyond the examples that I gave, I think we'll see the targets getting fairly stretched in terms of achievement, not better. And that will be the case as well. Then the question on the 30-day payments, as to there's a number of questions that the members posed on 30-day payments. I mean, the 94% that we managed to do within 30 days and what happened to the 6%. We should recall that what we are tracking is compliant invoices in terms of the fiscal of national treasury. It's invoices that come into the system that are compliant that is start to track. Invoices that are not compliant are not tracked, basically. So the 6% of invoices that were compliant were as a result of one or two disputes that were existing between ourselves and the service providers to resolve so that we could then pay. However, the extent of the total invoices that are there, given our operating model, is very difficult to put our finger on pulse as of now yet. Why? Because we do not have a proper mechanism to the system that can assist us do this. We are rolling out new IT systems, we did indicate before. We've already sorted out the billing accounting system to build. However, we need to introduce an end-to-end system that can assist us from the point of requisition of a service or a product up until the time we receive the invoice. So we can then, by the way, actually be able to track this. I'm sure we understand that. I mean, given the nature of our operations, where we've got about 11 regional offices, just all over the country, all located at the capital, police or capital of in the provinces themselves. These offices service various points all over those provinces. And for us to have them, it was that says to qualify. It needs to have been, you know, verified by the works manager. We need to travel from the center to where the work is done, certify the work, come back. So all that process itself is quite cumbersome. And in addition to that, I mean, the bulk of the work of invoices that are paid with the payment relate to our unscheduled maintenance of our buildings, where people get called in, go do this emergency work, and they do the work, leave it, and they wait until they are filling the cash crunch, and they start coming up with their invoices. And when they submit the invoice, we realize that there's a few missing things because they're not compliant with certain things that are required in terms of this complex SEM system that we have. And that creates the bottleneck and the delay in the payments. We are introducing an invoice tracking system, which is, as I said, a system, an end-to-end system for our procurement, from the position right after the invoicing, and that will assist us in doing this. There's a number of interventions that we put in place, like the training of our actual service providers who have complex systems so they can understand what the requirements are for an invoice to be a qualifying and compliant invoice for ease and quick processing and payments. So generally, that's the kind of broad context of why the slow payments of our invoices is happening.
I'll respond on the issue of Imruth.
I beg your pardon. May I propose before I see you are very eager to make your presentation, you'll get your chance. May I propose that we take a 15-minute break for tea time? Otherwise, we're going to have iced tea and iced coffee, which is more expensive these days. So we'll be back at 25%.
How then do we determine that, I think the Honourable Kieran made pose that question. Do it. We have a very huge data rate, and the budget is very limited. So prioritizing our conservation budget is very key. So as a result, then, one minister provides guidance in terms of policy statement and indicate that for this financial aid, these will be the priority areas we need to focus on. For example, in previous year, when the drive was for a clean audit, we emphasized the need to fill around the supply chain and finance position as part of that drive. This financial year, in terms of this policy statement, the emphasis now is on us operationalizing fully the GMCE. And therefore, their capacity in respect of their property management, experts, investment, property investment, skills, and so on, then comes critical in that regard. And hence, then, our priority will be formed by that aspect. Maybe jumping on also to the very cases, we had three fraud and corruption cases, but we have more. But the three fraud and corruption cases resulted in, for instance, one was where the officials concerned had 20,000 transferred into the brother's account, and he was able to pay his vehicle, but never disclosed that. The other two also relate to relationship between project managers and service providers. So the one has already been committed to the user. The two are currently in place, who are just awaiting the chaplain's report. And the third one has been dealt with in form of the pre-application dismissal. It's also not voluntary to be concluded in that regard. We do have targets. The targets in respect of our skills development beneficiaries are in our annual performance plan. Just to give you an example. For young professionals in the first quarter, the target was 50 in APP, and the achievement is that they wanted to report that one. For interns, the target for the first quarter was 106 interns, and for leadership was 45, and for management trainees was 8, and the achievement trainees was 50. So those are targets that you will find in our annual performance plan, and now we're working against that, how we perform in the first quarter. So the targets are there. And the other part maybe I need to indicate is the absorption rate in respect of these interns and the young professionals program. For the 60 that we have trained over the past year, we've been able to absorb about 50. In 63, we absorb about 50 of those. And if they're made and now, we're currently enrolled to absorb also two additional now in the current quarter, as we speak. The absorption rate of interns in the department is about 30%, but we have attracted some of those that in this department, about 45% of those then do get absorbed in other government departments as well. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
I apologize, I omitted one question with regard to teaching work, and just briefly, is the object concept that we agreed on nationally, and ILO defines as productive work for women and men in conditions of freedom, equity, security, and human dignity. And the question would be whether public employment programs should be viewed as decent work. What comes in new in terms of what decent work agenda would like to achieve? There are four pillars, and the public employment programs certainly would make contribution in terms of decent work agenda, the way that ELP phase 3 had been conceptualized and implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Binaga.
Thank you, sir. I'm responding to the questions around transformation. The current department has a program called Vukupile program, the learnership, whereby contractors are taken through for a period of 3 years, the classroom training and the actual site experiences. The classroom training will include the technical, managerial, administrative, and contractual training. So that is the program. What then happens, currently we have a number of 143. This is happening throughout the country. in partnership with municipalities. So that's the number that we have in terms of that, the current program that we have. Again, as a department, we are also implementing your joint venture approach, where your big contractors do work and match with smaller contractors. We also implementing the subcontracting as well, where the main contractor subcontractor portion of his or her work to a smaller contractor. And the third element, which is linked to what CIDP presented. CIDP presented the National Contractor Development Program, the status and where we are. As a department, we have indicated, we are implementing some of the elements. However, there were two critical issues. There was issues of certified and issues of procurement, which then the policy seeks to deal with that. And as a department ourselves, the draft policy, which is aligned to that, we've developed. So that policy has to go through the necessary approval processes in October. Then we can then get into implementing the policy, which then talks to setting aside for designated groups, your women, people with disability, and youth. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Shazana.
Thank you, Chairperson. On prestige, there are three questions that have been asked. One is in respect to the SLA with the presidency, the second one is on climate policy, and the third one is on the research report. In respect of the first question on the SLA with the presidency, I have to mention that we're not only doing the SLA with the presidency. There is the outlet that we provide to the presidency and parliament. We have already drafted the SLA for presidency. The second one will then to do the SLA for parliament. But for other prestige clients, which are other members of the executive, we all know that is regulated by the Ministry of Handbook. So all services that we provide to them is regulated around that, and also the norms of standards that we have to report to the two members. On the funeral policy, I think I need to mention that the funeral policy you determine is the custodian of the presidency. It's determined by the funeral policy for state funerals, which is part of the Minister's Handbook. However, as public works, we contribute in terms of supporting the infrastructure, as other departments, which the IAS and others are also having a particular role. But on our role, we have taken a very cautionary approach. Funerals by their nature, I think that is just unfair. But what we have seen for the past year and so, and we recognize the department that we need to a certain extent have some limits in terms of the expenditure of the state funerals. What we have done, some interventions that we have put in place now, is to get our CM reforms, including us enhancing capacity within the department, for us to acquire some of these infrastructure so that we don't depend on external service providers. Having said that, it has been a very difficult exercise to come with a particular cost limit on state funerals because of the vastness of our country. Some of these funerals happens in the far rural areas where there is not even a close by infrastructure for us to put. That's why one of the interventions that we put in place is to ensure that we acquire our own infrastructure so that we can be able to do this. But I must mention there has been a clear understanding on our side on our contribution on that infrastructure. That is aligned to the state funerals, which I just mentioned, that we only provide infrastructure when it comes to what needs to happen during the morning session at the house, what needs to happen at the grave, what needs to happen at the memorial service, what needs to happen at the ceremonial. So that is now the next step we need to do is for us to then, to a certain degree, determine what infrastructure can we have in the state and what are the cost limits of those that we need to outsource. So this is something that we are working on, which will then result into a policy on infrastructure support for state and official units. On the third question, on the research report, We are still working on the research report, and we are quite confident that on the Category 3 norms standards, we should be able to meet our targets. We have enhanced our capacity on policy development. Someone has just started on the 1st of September, which in a month or so we should be able to have analyzed the our research report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think there are comments, various comments that have been made by honorable members. The comments about, for example, the general overview in the of the presentation to sum up more or less what is our view of our performance in the environment in which the challenges are the environment itself. I think the plea from perhaps is to try and specific when we're dealing with those things and provide enough information to support the conclusions and assertions we're making. I think that concern we will take into account when we're reporting again to the committee on this matter. I think honorable member was did express in a number of areas where we have not been, given the actual numbers, even if they are there in the document. I think what we will do when we're coming back for the next presentation, we will make sure that we provide baselines where we have the baselines of the actual numbers delivered against targets, so that we don't. But I do think that members would have to be accommodated some of the areas that are problematic can be quantified and left to explain the extent of that where it is applicable. There is a question that relates to the project or structure of information that have not been concluded or finished, including roads. I think unless we can get the specifics, because in any geographical space, you either have a property owned that is in the custodians of Public Works National, or rural development if it's in the, for example, TPP stage, in the rural, largely in the rural areas, or some other department. All roads is provincial, is delivered through provincial government. So none of those roads would effectively be under the custodianship of the minister. So I think if there are specific issues, we could then refer the member to relevant and get the actual information so that we can be able to respond to the issue that the member is requesting from us. With regard to operational practice, in addition to what the Chair said, the operational practice is a multi-departmental project. Public Works role is dependent on the defined services that are being provided within the, for example, ocean economy, etc. And lastly, we'll deal with issues of issues for those small, sorry, for those businesses that are being encouraged to develop. And in the first order, quite a lot of work was being done largely in the department of DAF and environmental affairs. And then a lot of the application came through in July, August. I think we're sitting now at dealing with about 37 projects, which we will be able to report on when we come for the end of September report. We have as a department, in order to ensure that we perform our function in that presidential project, set aside, created a unit called the Small Harbors Unit, which is now engaging on the ground at the various areas, implementing even the infrastructure special development plan for dealing with infrastructure issues in those harbors. That is an issue that is taking place now. We've got dedicated capacity of officials who are now working on dedicated to operating parties, so particularly the small harbors projects. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Brief follow-ups. I want us to go to the financials quickly so that we also get that contribution before we rise today. Honorable Sultan, and Honorable Sipone.
Thank you, Chair. Just one question that has, two questions that have not been referred to, that definition of the word decent employment. Because I think there are a lot of differences around that. I didn't hear anyone actually addressing that specifically. And then my question on page 32, where I asked that the department should be more specific with regard to the issue of scarce skills. I think do away with efforts, this is a bullet point before, but issue of scarce skills where you say there are challenges. You know, how to handle that, because I remember one time when we were dealing with the issue of you getting people who have got these scarce skills from perhaps even outside of the country, and you defend us, and we said yes, we would support that, and why would we have programs that are not moving forward because we lack scarce skills? Lastly, Chair, I welcome the response of the DG with regard to the comments on page 33. My suggestion or request, Chair, is that the department should give us an interim report on this, a more specific report, because palm production will be referring specifically to developments that will have taken place in quarter two. We want specific responses to relating to progress, you know, achieved in quarter one. I don't want that to be said together, you know, with quarter two. Let's have an interim specific report rather than those generic. I appreciate the issue of time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sitole.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I was the official who was power transformation as well as in touch on issues of accreditation. Because the students that are competent in school, it takes more than 12 to 15 years before they get their accreditations. And then the issue of BE, because there is no transformation in BE. There are a lot of things that are not supposed to be transformed in that entity. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. When we were explaining about the ways and means of capacitating the contractors, there was an issue of subcontraction. So I just want you to find out as to whether are they able to make that when people were made to subcontract, as to whether this ended up being really capacitating them or not. Because in most cases, this subcontracting, it leaves those who are subcontracted even at a weather stage than those who were really the owners of the contract. So I just wanted to check as to whether they're able to check that and make sure that they are not really at the end of the day losing out even more. The last one, Honorable Chair, our delegation is almost 88% or 87% of men, only two women. The worst part of it, they are not even given a chance to answer some of those questions. We want to hear their voice. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Well, I must say, I saw the female delegates in the delegation giving information to those school. And during the tea break, one of them reprimanded one of the males who can say, he didn't mention this or that aspect. So he had a very good lesson. So it seems that the females in the delegation have got the whip hand.
I think Mr. Anderson, I'll come last. Yes, I may have forgotten the very unanswered question that I need to ask. The Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. If I may, I'd just like to point out that the Department has taken a strategic decision to set up a new branch for proper management and control of immovable assets, and I'm responsible for that branch. And I think also, Chair, Honourable Members, in striving to be truthful about not meeting overall targets, we were perhaps remiss in that we may have incorrectly created the impression that there's no work that's actually going on with regards to those targets. And that's an incorrect impression. For example, on the issue of the physical verification, at 31st March 2015, the department had actually verified 99.1% of identified land parcels. Now, to be specific, that would be a number, I think, around 30,000 plus of identified land parcels. The remainder of those properties is what constitutes what we need to do for the new financial year. Now, during the course of the first quarter, we treated that as our planning or initiation phase. So with regards to physical verification, there was a lot of work that was actually done in terms of our pilot project. So that would involve all the logistical arrangements. It would involve getting on board your proper IT resources. You know, we use tablets out in the field to actually identify the properties and get the information back to head office. We are busy with your vehicles, engagement with field workers. You know, we have quite a substantial property portfolio. So I think that even though we didn't meet our target, I think we did perhaps around, 160, maybe 200 properties odd. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of work that has been done, and perhaps we were remiss in not clearly delineating that. In regards to your coastal reserves, the actual mapping of the coastal reserves is the preserve of the Surveyor General's office, and I think that's a statutory requirement. Obviously, because they belong to us, we would want them all reflected in our asset register. But the actual task of identifying the coastal reserves, it's a mammoth task. Nobody actually knows what the actual number is if you engage with environment, with Chief Surveyor General's department. So all the stakeholders are coming together to do that initial work of identification of the coastal reserves. And, we will then, at a given point in time, arrive at the actual mapping. But it's a mammoth task covering registered properties, unregistered properties, property that has not even been surveyed yet. And then also on your conveyancing, to our mind, that should really refer to your endorsements properly, not really your standard, conveyancing type transactions. Chair, members, I would hope I've tried to clarify some of the issues there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Just on the follow-up on the translation, then I'll wrap up.
Yes, Chair. With the program that I reported on, which is routine, yes, contractors, when they have it, they get into level 4. And you get trained on site supervision, and you have level 4, which is 254 credits, or on contracting as well, which is 218 credits. You're trained on labor intensive, and for 3 years, when you exit, the program aimed also at you getting level 3. Remember, get the classroom training and the on-site kind of training, level 3 of CITV. So that's what, yeah. So accreditation, yes, you do get in level 4. Thank you.
Part of the department's intervention in addressing the matter that the Honourable Member raised regarding the abuse of subcontractors by the larger contractors. One of the areas, for example, where such abuse is very prevalent is non-payment on time, or non-payment at all sometimes because they haven't been paid by somebody else. And we will assume that we published for CITV in the government gazette, new regulations that deal with a mechanism for dealing with the issues of dispute between for that 30-day panel. So that
a larger group, the main hunger cannot use the excuse that they have not been fit to deal with them. In the process, kill a small subcontractor in terms of that contract. But it also imposes a bigger penalty now on government if government is the reason for that delay. So both ways we are seeking to address the issue that the bigger contractor will say sometimes we are delayed by government, we are punishing government. I think there's a huge penalty interest. And that is charged to government, which you will see will force people to run to pay contractors very quickly. And therefore, there is no other legal excuse for the other party to then delay. And the arbitration mechanisms have been shortened so that there will be an ability for the subcontractor to appeal very quickly when he's being abused on that basis. We hope it will work. It's been out for comment, I think, closely. Probably in August, right? End of August. And for people to make comments. We will see what comments have been given. I'm sure at some stage the portfolio committee would like presentation share to be put down with our departments to present that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like us to go to the financials. You're done. You seem to despair. And that probably with the fact that my two questions are avoidable. I think I'll have to leave with that situation. They are avoidable successfully, not even skating around them. I think I'll just have to leave with that chair. I'll engage with DG, anyone on my level, because I respect him.
No, that's not going to help us. If an issue was raised in the meeting, it's for the meeting, it's not for one-on-one. Just recap what it is, so that if they've forgotten your questions, they can respond to them. And then we go to the financials.
Thanks for that opportunity, sir. It was my very best question. What do you mean by decent work? Nobody has come anywhere near explaining that. I said, would you that as a mere mistake? Are we talking about long-term employment? Or are we talking about a type, quality of work, blue-collar job, white-collar job? What do we mean by decent job? Because that's your own benchmark. The second question is related to page 32 about scarce skills. What is the problem about getting scarce skills? We're here to make sure that the country has got enough scarce skills so that our projects are not frustrated because we don't have scarce skills. Thank you.
I have a question that was answered. Mr. Henson?
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for being inaudible earlier. I'll try again and hopefully the microphone works. I tried to give a definition of how the International Labour Organization, how they define decent work. And I would briefly try to unpack the definition that reads productive work, that decent work would be productive work for women and men in conditions of freedom, equity, security, and human dignity. And then there are a few issues as we unpack it that speaks to the following. That should deliver productive work, should deliver income. It should also provide security in the workplace and social protection. It should also offer prospects for personal development and encourage social integration. And it should give people the freedom to express their concerns, to organize and participate in decisions that affect their lives. Which means community involvement, community participation, a whole range of things. And it is not a definition that particularly speaks to public employment programs per se. It's a general definition, of course. And public employment programs, what I suppose it contains certain elements of that. Nobody's arguing that public employment programs are the answer to the unemployment problem. No. But if we do analyze what public employment programs offer, give you an example, the fact that workers, that they participate in EPLP kind of projects, they do earn an income, and the income serves as an income transfer into the poor households, which means there's a form of social protection. Many households often will simply have an old age pension to rely on, sometimes nothing. So in that context, public employment programs contribute to social protection. There are many other obviously advantages in terms of assets credit and service delivered. Chair, I will leave it at that. Not all the leverage, but there are four pillars that I can speak to should you it require. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Financials. Yeah.
Chairperson, if I could respond to this.
Oh, the second question.
Yes. Second concern around the scale and critical skills, am I right? Now, I mean, we've gone through a process of identifying and assessing those critical and skill skills. And I'll give some examples. For example, on the engineering side would be mechanical, structural, civil, electrical. Quantity surveying is also one of them. Urban design professionals, property management professionals, property economists, water and environmental scientists, for example. And what we've done, we actually got an entire plan with respect to the identification and also the types of actions that we will take to start addressing this. In the interim, we still need to get the job done. And I think that is where, through a combination of our implementing partners, we are also engaged with the GTEC of National Treasury, who is assisting us to source professionals. We have engaged with the DPSA, and we are actually currently in developing a memorandum of understanding just so that we are able to address those professionals. Kufa is assisting us more on the implementation side, and it's just to get some of that. Together with that, we are also looking and engaging with industry and the universities. And when I talk about industry, I'm talking about, for instance, the South African Property Owners Association, which has some training partnerships together with the universities, where we are saying, are there some of these elements that we can incorporate into our organization from a perspective of training and development. We also have a program of really targeted recruitment, because the more specialized the skills, the more you have to be proactive in terms of finding where the individuals are. We are also targeting working with retired professionals as some of the examples as well. We also have a program in place in the particular areas as well, where we've got young graduate professionals who are on a structured program, who are being developed, you know, and are also being given an opportunity to work in the real world environment. Some of them are influenced and handled into the more specialized areas. For instance, you will have a town planner come on board as a young professional, and we are starting to have conversations with them, but we have a need on the urban design front. So when they start talking about their postgraduate studies, for example, we start saying the progress is channeling in their lives for the benefit of us and the benefit of the individual going forward. We are also, and I think I forgot the investment, property investment professionals as well, because you will know that property is an investment of government. Thanks.
Thank you. Now, the financials, if they are still there. We are looking for that last cent. Thank you, Chair and honourable members. Let me try and find that last sentence for the Chair. I will start with the main account, which is the main vote, which is DPW, and provides a summary of the expenditure report for the month ended 30 June, which is the first quarter of this financial year, 2015-16. In terms of the bottom number, the allocation for the year is about 6.4 billion rands, and as of until the end of June, which is the first quarter of the financial year, we have spent about 1.9 billion, which translates to 30% of the actual budget, the actual allocation. If you compare with the time that has last expired in the year, that's supposed to have been sitting about 25%, so we're sitting at 30%, a 5% positive variance depending on where you look at it, members. This is the first year that we are reporting the main account and PFTE in such a way, or after the transfer of functions, which then followed the transfer of budget. If you recall, we changed the program budget structure of the department, and but after a process of reinforcing the property management functions and construction management functions under the PFTE. So the actual expenditures of PFTE, or the funds of PFTE, are sitting under the transfers in the main account. So if you look at it, you'll realize that there's been a marked decline in your composition of employees in the main account, similarly with goods and services, and then as a step in terms of the transfers if you compare year on year. So the actual expenditure, when you look at the main account, we speak about 21% in terms of the composition of employees, year supposed to be sitting at 25%. The question is, do you want to save or do you want to, not employ, or what are you doing? The point is, we've gone through the process of, as DG Corporate Services indicated, to prioritize what positions we're going to be appointing, and the process of appointments and recruitment will start to happen. But we have to keep this expenditure very closely on our radar, coming from a long streak of having overshot our expenditure on the composition of the place as a department, where we have challenges of unauthorized expenditure that we've reported in prior periods. So we are managing those quite closely. The goods and services is sitting at 19%, and the 19% is along the lines of us doing our cost containment measures and the program in terms of our expenditure. The transfers are sitting at 1%, far above the 25%, and these are in line with the actual drawdown schedules that we've agreed upfront in terms of the transfer that we're making to the entities that are under the department. And then the balance is 16%, 7 million that is spent to date on the machinery and equipment, which is in a way aligned to the actual appointment of people. If you appoint of people, then you get the actual, you know, expenditure out to provide the necessary tools of trade for people to be able to do the work that they have to do. I will just skip the rest of the others because I've already explained it. In terms of the allocation itself, the total allocation of 6.4 billion that I indicated, 80% of that goes to our transfers, and the 7% goes to our composition of employees, and the goods and services takes over 6% of the actual allocation that we have for the main board. I'll not explain the narrative that's in there, but rather just go and indicate to yourself what kind of transfers are we talking about. These are the list of the SPs and bodies that we transfer money to. The 5.5 total transfer appropriated in the 15-16 financial year, 5.5, and the actual transfers that we've done to date of 1.7 billion rands, just running off with the nearest thousands, hundreds of thousands, basically. And if you look at it, the big numbers in terms of transfers, that's with a property management trading entity, and that money gets transferred to property management trading entity. And in the property management trading entity, we've got different programs under that as well. So we'll just see it as we, when I do the accounts for the PMTE. The second, take of transfers is PWP, as you know, the incentives that we have, about 7 billion, and the rest is small numbers in terms of the CIDD, the Council for the Birds Environment,
environment for the 2 million, sorry, and the IDT, that's the first million that I spoke about that we've already transferred to the first quarter, and there are no more transfers that will go to PMT, to the IDT in the current year under review. That was at the end. And the last thing, that BIMA SA, 10 million, which is the entity that does our certification of our products, technologies, methodologies, and yeah. That's 10 million, which we currently, or in terms of formalizing the enhancement of the agreement SA, the bill, I think, is requirement to pass the Act to establish the agreement SA. Okay. In terms of the programs themselves, we've got 5 programs, changed from last year. The administration remains the same, which accounts for 7% of the budget. Of 6.4 billion, 425 million rand. Then we've got a new program, Intergovernmental Relations, to take care of the broader business of the new Department of Public Works, as in the policy formulation, monitoring and evaluation regulator, and sectoral matters that have to do with the DPW sector as a whole. And we've got an allocation of 47, we've got about 6.9, that's the area that we need to start to capacitate extensively to be able to do what we plan to do with that program. And then EPWP and the Property and Construction Industry Policy and Research, which is the 2.8 billion, that's in this program that PMTE's transfer is sitting, which is about 3.6 billion of that 3.8. The Prestige Policy, which is the execution of our prestige work in terms of the state functions and all events that are state related, and the 2 million to date is about 27 million of that 92 million, so about 30%. Giving us the total 1.9 billion expenditure for the first quarter, 30% of the total allocation. That, and then the standard of the allocation per program, that program four, which is the property, property and construction industry and policy research takes over 59% because it's mostly where all the transfers are happening, then 31% EPWP, and the balance is going to the administration prestige as well as the intergovernmental coordination. That should conclude the main vote, and I can move on to the PMT financial information and just provide a summary of the performance of the PMTE for the first quarter as well. And if you look at it, the total revenue on PMTE that are budgeted is about 10.9, almost 11 billion rands. And the total expenditure is it's almost the same. If you look at the revenue versus the expenditure, the budget and the allocation of PMTE, because at the objectives of PMTE were always the netting of the income against expenditure, breaking even. So the push side of the review is actually expenditure, because you look at the line that we have there. What we correct, we utilize in various ways, and I'll try and explain that later on. Of the revenue that we projected of 10.9 billion, we've claimed to date about 4.57 billion. Which is about 23% of that total allocation, and we received, in terms of cash, about 2.2. The reason being, some of the revenues we claim upfront, especially if you look at the hospital accommodation charges of about 1.9 billion, which is about 30% of the actual budget, we invoice upfront so that we can collect the money. And we wish to do that. We have a direct support of Treasury for the release of the money to come upfront from the departments in terms of the engagements that we've got with Treasury. So of that, what we claim of 1.9 billion, so almost 2 billion, we have collected or received about 848, which is 43% of what we actually claimed in terms of the invoicing that we did at the beginning. The private accommodation charges, we have claimed 1 billion of the 4 billion, which is about 25%, which is aligned with the actual period that has expired, and we've received about 361 million off that, which is 36%. The issue with this being that there are matters that we are resolving with banks with respect to the collectivity, collection of these monies from ZAS. The management fees have projected 101 million. 191 million is a fee that we are charging to client departments, which is about 5% of the municipal services that we are paying on behalf of other departments. If you look at it, that's more or less about 3.8 billion dollars that we pay to municipalities on behalf of client departments, and for the service we charge a minimum fee of 5%, a considerable income of about 121 million dollars to protect. Today we came 42 million. We've collected, which is about 22% of the budget, and we've collected so about 21 million of that, which is about half. The augmentation is a transfer that should come from the main vote, 2.8 billion that we've got our budget. Today we spent about 1.7, and we have received about 1 million, and the balance between the two being what has come to visitors of the reconciliation processes that we are doing with the main vote. The expenditure against that income, which is 4.7 income that we have against the total of what we claim, less the expenditure of 2.3, giving us a surplus of 2.4. But in terms of real cash, the actual surplus in terms of the cash that we've arranged of the 1.9 billion against the income, which is what we received for the cash basis of about 2.2, giving a surplus of 287 million rands. What we do as an indicator is indicate what the level of our bank overdraft is. As you know, that we've had this as one of the challenges of the department. The bank overdraft is at 229 million rand. And why so reduced in terms of what we get on a normal basis is because we received a lot of money from client departments towards a lot of our financial year last year. So we're sitting on those money, that's one. Secondly, we received money from the main board for transfers, which is of the council, and we need, there are certain costs the department incurs on behalf of the department of MTE. But to reimburse the department, there's a fair amount of requisitions that needs to happen because the expenses are still going through the department that are related to PMT, so we will have to refund the department, and that process is completed now as we speak. So that will change the overdraft scenario quite considerably. That's the financial performance as we have it today. I'll not go into the detail of the individual, but in terms of the summary of the expenditure, what line items we spend money on, that's the compensation of employees, which we budgeted or allocated 1.3 billion. That's the goods and services, which include our cleaning and garden services, the renting leases that we pay, maintenance, repair, and renovations, which is just maintenance, not capital expenditure or activities toward the buildings. That's about 7.4 billion rands of the allocation. Transfer payments, which is transfer payments, which are the payments that are made to the municipalities for our property rates and taxes of the department. We've allocated 1 billion toward our portfolio that we pay property rates and taxes on. And then the capital payments that we are making, that includes the rehabilitation of our buildings, the repairs, renovations of a capital nature, and the machinery and equipment, that's about 1.2 billion. That gives us a total project size of PMTE of about 11 billion rands, of which the expense is about 2.3, which is sitting about 21%, which is up 4% below where we are supposed to be. Although this becomes just an indicator about the PMTE, it's a different way that we look at how we do this use based on the stage of completion of projects that we are executing. In the prior, we were sitting at 90% same period. So there has been a lot of improvement in terms of the extent to which we do the work. And then we have just turned the same point in terms of indicating the expenditure per objective. And the objective being the opinion and the resources. How much are we spending on this? We're spending money on behalf of certain departments like the justice, the courts, to clean and do garden resources over and above our own buildings. The total allocated is about 293 million of that. We spend about 33 to 16% for leasing. Our total lease portfolio, which is the portfolio of assets that we are leasing from private sector, is about 4.1 billion today to spend one. And the refurbishments and repairs and maintenance under which you've got planned maintenance, which is about 867 million allocation, which is then about 170 million. plant maintenance, which is capital, 889. We spent about 191. Rehabilitation of our actual buildings with the allocation of 335, which is 698. And our unscheduled maintenance, which is day-to-day emergency work, we've allocated 1 billion there and spent today 267 million. Your municipal services, we certainly had an allocation of 264 to date. We've got about 14 million rather to spend. However, this number has set the reconciliation processes that are undergoing to the two entities. This figure has actually moved to about 70 million rands as we are sitting now. It's about 25% that we have been. This was a situation at the time of closure of the accounts at the end of June. But subsequent to that, that's changed. As the procuration taxes, a billion rand has been set aside. We're spending about 180 million rands. Why does this seem very slow? Is because, as we know, the year ends, or the beginning of the financial year for the municipalities is supposed to July. And when it comes to the 1st of July, all invoices come in, we pay, so that expenditure just goes up instantly, like that. However, that will be for the current. Then we have a real procuration taxes that we have to settle as well. We are running an expansive program to verify the invoices that municipalities have issued us, as you know, the complaints about government departments not paying. We have taken that process ourselves, the department to coordinate all departments around the crystallizing of the actual amounts are due. And as soon as that process is complete, we should also see the actual payments and around the population taxes. We estimate, project that that project will be complete or the exercise will be done later on in the year. I think in the third quarter, that project will be complete and the crystallization of the actual tax that are owed to municipalities will then start to be paid off. Then the position of employees, we certainly have 24% of the 1.3 billion, that is 7 million rand that we spent, and the goods and services at 47.6%. And 6% ideally is because of the most of the turnaround projects sitting in here. And there's been a lot of groundwork that has been put in place.
Just a second, please. Honourable Attorney. And I'm sorry, Chairperson, I
it's 2013-2014, I don't know the current date, because it's supposed to be 2015-16, now it's 2013-14.
The last column is indicating last year the same period. Last year, quarter one, what was the expenditure? So I'm comparing quarter one of this year and last year quarter one, just to see whether we progress now. So, 14-15, oh, okay. Honorable member, I'm going to wake up. Thank you very much. I'm going to complete it.
It's not very comforting if you make us part of your nightmare or your dream.
Okay. The last column is 2014-15. You are correct. Yeah. Yeah, and this year is 15-16. So, honorable member is correct. My apologies for that oversight. Okay. I think that should conclude up. Actually, that was the notes that relate to all of that. And maybe we get to the actual capital spend of DBW, the infrastructure budget itself, is also been transferred to PMG, so this is from the certain line of PMG's expenditure, that we have a total allocation of 733, today we spent about 8.11%, and I think the including that there's a number of strategic acquisitions that we're going to be making that actually will increase the expenditure quickly when we go along. There's the whole Salva Cop area where we're going to need to spend money is up, you know, for bulk services, credit for some, about 70 million. There's acquisition of buildings that we are looking at, around about 112 million that we're going to be spending money on. And those are just waiting for finalization of the transactions, and then this expenditure will shift up quite possibly. In terms of revenue management, I think this is one thing that members have a particular interest in, is the status of our taxes, whether we collect the money. The question that I was asked earlier on, that why would you sit and have an obligation to pay within 30 days, but you are not collecting, or you are collecting within 60 days? I thought that was a very smart question that really put me a little bit way back in my myself. But I think it's a valid question as well. Very valid. I think we have a challenge with respect to our operating model as PMTS normally used to report, that this operating model of us, we work on behalf of our client departments, pay our service providers, and then correct later. That's not good for us. And in that sense, it just puts us in a very different position. On a calculation that we did, we have heard on average, we're bridging finance for client departments, we have about 800 million. Which is very finance over, you know, a 3 month period. So it's just the one period they have. So that is creating a problem in terms of our collection of our debtors. We have had a discussion with Treasury around this matter where we are introducing advanced billings. We are talking to Treasury to also assist us in really cleaning up the departments to pay within 30 days. You know, as we are all located, we also need to collect in 30 days. So the status of our debtors, I mean, currently, as you see on the last column, you said about 4.3 billion, of which 1.7 billion relates to years before, which is a serious challenge. This amount, if you look at it and unpack it, it goes right back to 2006. And that consists of reconstruction of our documentation, the loss of documents, you know, the historical issues that we've alluded to, about the department, which actually necessitated the turnaround intervention. We are busy dealing with those issues with, together with Treasury, to try and resolve this. We are largely all from government departments, and all monies are sitting within this big fiscal wheel, basically. It comes out there, it comes in there. So we are trying to find ways and mechanisms to try and do the collections of these monies as a matter of priority. We just did an analysis of the accommodation charges that we are levying on our clients, and which are the top 10 clients that we have, and those are the clients that we have that are owing us monies, and how we build them as well. Similarly, on the private accommodation, which are the top 10 clients, what's the debt, how much they owe us, from when, how did we invoice them, and what's still outstanding currently. Municipal services and reserve infrastructure projects, we've also listed all of those there. I've got in the interest of time, let me try and rush to the slide that deals with the interventions to address non-outstanding debts. And these debts, like I said, it's a result of the disputes that clients have put on the table, the dispute of patient, the time to tell us, well, these are mostly 2 years, 10 years ago, do you think we sent this money on our baseline? Those kind of things. We know the department coming from where we are coming. We've had serious problems with the limitation of scope in terms of not being able to provide documentation and as the process of having to reconstruct some of these things. We've paid money off not in accordance with these agreements, all the things that we've reported before. So this is starting to crystallize and start to see, the difficulties that this has cost the department. We have arranged meeting with legal clients together Treasury. We have intervention plan in place to deal with issues, like I said, the advanced billings. We send letters of demand signed by us, supported by Treasury. Treasury has issued instruction notes to clients that this is going to have to stay because some of the reasons clients were not paying were because we could not provide them an active method. We are spending them on the basis of the devolved budget of 2006. And they were holding money, Treasury issued an exemption to them, so we'll see the money coming through. So there have been a lot of interventions that we are putting in place. We are introducing a billing and accounting system, as I said, we've already implemented it. We are now rolling out other systems that will feed the billing and accounting system so that we can then be in a position to bill, indicate the bill, the occupancy, the rates, all of those things that would need to have in terms of an appropriate invoice. That's about it, Chair, honourable members, Chair, the status of the finances of the Department of PMTE as in good one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, my question is not to specific figures. My question is related to the reorganizational restructuring and moving the property management, or management of property, to the separate entity. And if you think of the main or the core function of the department is to manage, to provide the accommodation needs of the state and to manage the accommodation needs of the state. And then you look at the various entities under the department. The public work, public, the property management trading entity, PTE, was the worst performing entity. So I remember 2 years ago when I was on this committee, it had disclaimer after disclaimer for a couple of years. Worse than the department itself, which didn't have a good record for the Auditor General itself. But the PMDE was the worst, by far the worst. Now you take the bulk of your budget, the heart of the department, and you move it to this. It was a non-performing and dysfunctional entity, and you move it in. It doesn't make sense to me. Now, I simply can't understand. Now, I want to know from the CFO, is he happy? Does he feel comfortable in moving the bulk of the department's work, and the taking the heart out of the department with the bulk of the budget, and you're moving this to a completely dysfunctional entity?
Thank you very much, Honorable Sultan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my first comment is on energy regeneration. If you check energy regeneration, yes, talking about that, the budget that is going to energy regeneration, but there is no progress. There is no progress, Chairperson, really, because that thing is what I said for they call it fiscal disaster. That's what the Pretoria. Now we have public human settlements. They are even them doing energy regeneration. So I don't know which is right now in the zoo who doing this energy regeneration, because both of them are budgeting for the energy regeneration. If they can keep a budget, and which implementation have been done in Swan on the energy regeneration. And the other question is the one of year after year we are budgeting for Commonwealth workplace. But sometimes we find that we have been overspending on that. Can they give everybody what is the need? The last one, Chairperson, is the term of
On that note of the last one, we find it's okay. Honorable Vitan. Thank you, sir.
Page 41. I may have missed the explanation as to why there was an expenditure on CETA. CETA. Yeah. Maybe you did provide it and that. Maybe I missed the point.
The general view that the department does not maintain its properties well.
How do you, if you agree with me, how do you provision for that in your budget? I see that you have made some provision, but how would you counteract that? Because that is not a good reputation, you know, to have. And in that space also, the last time I spoke to the department, I mean, just a couple of months back, for a project, you know, that needed to be done in the Barawas area. I was told that the entire office, which is responsible for the Barawas area, this is in the Eastern Cape, the entire office was virtually dysfunctional. And my concern is whether now any operations are taking place there, and that, you know, when maybe, because we don't have a district or province by province expenditure. What is happening to the entire office? Is it up and running now? Is it still dysfunctional? Because there are services that the people need in that area, and it does concern me that, you know, had that it was virtually dysfunctional because of the personnel issue. And how do you measure, you keep talking about your return on investment. How do you measure the return on investment in rand terms? If not in rand terms, this may not be the case at least, because basically government provides social services. How do you see that the government is getting a good return for its investment?
because when we us are presented and we either support or don't support, you know, we always work on the understanding that whatever run, there's a good return that you know, where government then, you know, where it gets back. Lastly, on page 56, how do you propose to address the issue of your own declared case, and we appreciate that, of providing interest-free finance, so to speak? I've looked at the interventions that you have put there, you know, in your closing notes. I couldn't find one that specifically addresses this kind of ill, if I may use that term. Thank you.
On the evil route, the department will respond.
Thanks, Chair and honourable members. Let me start with the first question as to why would we transfer the so much money to an entity that doesn't work? Maybe let me just give a little bit of background of the PMTE. The approval for the establishment of the PMTE was granted in 2006, and the intentions behind that approval, or why that was thought, was to professionalize the property management and construction management of the department's activities. Property management, construction, reinvent them, introduce best practices, and so that they can be at a particular level of efficiency in terms of enhancements and all that, away from the department. That was the intention. That approval was granted, and the granting of that approval was for the establishment of a trading entity, not a private or a public entity. A trading entity by way of a trading accounting established within the Department of Public Works. So the PMTE is not something outside of the Department of Public Works. It is something within the Department of Public Works. It has the same minister. It is accountable to the same accounting office as the director. So that's the background of the PMTE. Now, over these years, historically, I think there's this sluggish movement towards properly establishing the PMT over since the granting of this of the approval. And one of the requirements of the trading entity is that it has to account for on the basis of an accrual accounting system, as opposed to a cash basis accounting, which is a normal departmental way of accounting. Now, all these years, those were never established in terms of the basis of accounting properly to account for the PMTE the way it should be, on accrual basis. And that in itself was enhanced in the multiple and perpetual disclaimers that the PMTE has actually achieved, and that was a problem. In 2 years ago, we took a decision to take that decision and operationalize it, which means establish the PMTE properly and do the things that were set out to do when the approval to establish it was granted. And that's when we started to do this thing 2 years ago. You will realize, ever since that decision and ever since our resolve to actually operationalize the PMTE, the measure of that performance of whether we are doing well or not doing well has been a good outcome. We had a disclaimer, I'm sure you're starting to forget about disclaimers and PMT because it's coming back 3 years old. When we operationalized the PMT, no more disclaimer. We moved, we had a qualification. And if you look at the first qualification that we had moving from a disclaimer, it was still very problematic. Last year we had a qualification, but the basis of the qualification was on narrow issues basically. And in this year you will see when we come and present the audit of the annual report, what the outcome has been. So there's been consistent improvement as you go along in terms of the establishment of the PMTE. So the PMTE is not operating outside of the department, it is part of the department, and the idea of establishing it is to professionalize it and hence the discussions that we have with ourselves about getting necessary, you know, professional skills, technical skills to be on board, change the whole way of doing the business. There's going to be a rigorous process of business process re-engineering within the PMTE to ensure that we can do the things that we do in a professional, best practice manner. So yes, I think that's the intention of why we moved to SASSA. The idea is to be able to account for the property management function and the construction function of the activities of the department separately, so that we can see how those are doing and how we fare. And the place of accounting being a club accounting is accrual based as opposed to cash, along the lines of what Trump said to us. I think that's the intention. So we have not taken this money and put it away. We have a separate board that will manage 3.6 billion and we decide what we want to decide to do. Now it's all within the department. We are fully accountable to the accounting officer, which is DG and the minister. I hope that clarifies the issue. The one about HCR agreement, I mean, this money has to do with the Balsam Society report, including the 733 million rand allocation of the department's capital budget, infrastructure budget. There's big amounts that will go out for strategic acquisitions, including the money that we're going to spend on Salva Corp for power services that we need to provide to start the process, or to ensure that we finalize the process of our government pursuit that we are considering at Salva Corp. So certainly in that 83 million rands that we're going to be paid for the power services, that money will flow immediately. The contracts we have finalized for the appointments of those providers for all of us were finalized in May. We started the process, appearances, and all of that. So we start to see the flow of money going out for this. We've actually engaged the National Treasury Partnership with SAC in doing this project, and they are overseeing the Treasury's GTAC, is overseeing the project on our behalf. So there will be also a conduit for the receipt of money when we actually do the payments to the server. In terms of having spending money on the generation of respondent, so I think it's just a government, you know. They are responsible for the city, and they are responsible to energize and renew and revitalize the city. So as a city, as a authority, they are carrying out their responsibility. We have,
I think conceptually, Swani is responsible for making sure that the inner city of Swani is functional. Government is contributing towards that in the case of its provision of its services, so that all investments that government make for head offices in Swani are done in the inner city, and that will then regenerate the inner city and make them active. That's the objective. Swani has its own objectives. We have our own. In fact, we work together as an intergovernmental structure to do that. For the rest of the city, and they are already placed between the two institutions. Where they are committed to certain land parcels where we require them in order to get the option.
Question of the Commonwealth Road Race. There's I have the question every year.
May the dead rest in peace.
But usually it's for the people who are of our grace, our contribution to the Commonwealth, for the grace that are outside of the country, they are in France, all over the world, and that's our contribution. There's a whole commission that studies
and now and soldiers, African soldiers, do it there today. Whose history was not recognized at the time. I think the memorial is being developed to actually discover that history and make sure that it is possible. So it is quite a heritage that we must be proud of as well. Thank you.
The transfer on to the CETA, or the amount of the CETA that are not showing any movement. In terms of the transfer schedule, the drawdown schedule, I think the transfer is happening in the third quarter. I'm not sure it's either the quarter or the third quarter. That's the transfer to the CETA. That's a construction and education training. Okay. And then the Butterworth, in terms of my DDG colleague,
corporate services to provide. But what happens is that when we have an arrangement and a partnership with the CETA in terms of driving skills development, for instance, in the area of aspiration, some of the skills we've mentioned to you around the engineering services and access. What then happens is that we place those programs, those learners, on a program between our agreement and the CETA. The CETA does not give us an advance. And therefore, we utilize our own concession budget to put them on our system, on our parasa, to pay them these advance. But at the end of the financial year, we then submit a claim to the CETA to defend the necessary transfers. That's what happens in a sense. But they're not in a sense, very efficient, if we have our challenge. The challenge is within the Umtata region. I think it's stabilized now. You will remember there was a stage when there was a protest action. As a result, we had to begin to intervene the department. And one of the things that we have done was to conduct 4 different investigations. The first one was what we regard as a labor relations investigation. The 3 were related to projects across the region. Buffalo Timber, Amatola, those are project names. And we have finalized 2 of those investigations and charges, as we speak, have been set to the affected individuals. That's it. Thanks.
That's the question of how do you measure tenant investment as government. I guess the measurement is not based on profit motive. We are still grappling with it because we need to understand to have a sense of the kind of efficiency you derive. And secondly, for the PMG itself, for example, as a provider of accommodation, therefore, as a custodian of the actual properties that are used, you would want to make sure that the income derived is sufficient for the PMG to be able to build, to build the ability to maintain on an ongoing basis without having to react. And secondly, manage the whole property appropriately and be able to replace that property when the time comes. That was partially the major portion, major reason and rationale for the refinancing, so that the PMTE, it does not have a stop-start arrangement when it has to replace its assets. You will see that most, something I've noticed recently, that there is a mindset in the government that as we try to reduce this ill of lease, which is over 4 billion, when we acquire the property and say we no longer want to be leasing, because we are in this property forever, this property has never been used by anybody else other than government, so we acquire it. The minute you can do that, department should that they shouldn't pay now. I don't know why they expect you to get the money to maintain the building because it's still a proper facilities management arrangement so that the building does not deteriorate as quickly as we have seen. And that's the kind of mindset that the PMG arrangement is going to change for government. So that we have less of these properties that are not maintained, not used, and not available for generation of income. And therefore, a cost of that. So I guess the concentration of measurement, of financial measurement, must be about the extent to which you reduce the cost to government that is unnecessary. And we will come there one day when we've done sufficient research on the tenants and measurement.
I think the last question was on the industry, why we provide, you know, bringing finance with no turning interest. I think this kind of engagement that we take from the treasury, that we need to find punitive measures to encourage those who are not paying us payers. After we've actually almost over, after we are done the best that we can do it also,
enhancing the efficiencies of our operations. That's very important. But this is a discussion that we have shared with you. What mechanisms can we introduce to make sure there is an encouragement towards payments? And I suppose it's something that we will consider then.
Honorable Marcella, followed by Honorable Evans and Fulton.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Mine is on slide number 51, where he talks about the property rate. He says there is an improvement on processing the claims from the municipalities. I just wanted to check how are you dealing with the rural municipalities as far as this is concerned, because it has been a very difficult issue for the rural municipalities to be able to be paid what is due to them as far as property rate is concerned. And on that 43, when I check the percentage there, it seems as we are talking of the whole amount being 99%. I don't know whether you were able to check it, because 1% of billions of money is a lot of money. It needs to be accounted for. Thank you. On page 43.
Thank you, Chair. The first one now to do in Afrikaans. The first speaker is part of the Commonwealth Grange. Nou, ons weet wat is die randpompwaarde. As ek wil weet, word daar groot vir die fluctuering in die randpompwaarde. Dan tweedens, voorzitter.
Misschien voor hy na tweedens toe gaan, misschien moet ons probeer vertel as.
I think you got it. I think you got it. I can see his face. Body language. Just as in the poly, previous presentation, some of the members said that they are busy rolling out a new IT system and they are introducing an invoice tracking system. Now all that I want to know is that reflected in the 16% slide 38 that is spent. On slide 38, machinery and equipment, he said, reflected there. Then, Jefferson, on page slide 51, on notes on the expenditure, guidelines expenditure at the end of June 2015, 25%. Now, on bullet point 2, the expenditure was lower than expected at the end of the first quarter, due to some contracts being awarded later than originally planned. Was this done due to a lack of capacity? Why were the contracts later issued? Then, Jefferson, on slide 62, the following innovations were made. Meetings with client departments have been held to follow up. I would like to know your outcomes. Intervention of National Treasury. What sort of interventions were done and why? And then, Chairperson, very interesting under bullet point 2. Clients have reported a number of reasons for not paying. That's still on slide 62. And the C part, the lack of supporting document lease agreement. So the same thing comes, there is no lease agreement. What has the department done to counter this lack of supporting documents? Is it on the part of the department? On the part of the department. Because the clients have reported there are a number of reasons not paying. This is slide 62, we are DDG. Thank you.
Thank you,
George.
Thank you. Finish.
Thank you. Just a follow-up to partially new one, if I may tolerate it.
question of the poor grace is refusing to die. If my memory serves me well, it was during the First World War that a ship called Mandy sank on the banks, so to speak, of the Eastern Cape seawards. I know I come from Barrow, that the names of those people were inscribed in a stone in the center of town Barrow. Now, I don't know what guides the department to say it's got to remain war graves of people who died overseas. What is happening? What attention on an ongoing basis does the department provide for the victims of that warship called Mandy? If not, why not? This lesson on the question of the war graves overseas. This is not just a personal thing. It's actually in a funeral a month or so ago in Seoul. And a prominent citizen said, Fulsane, we would like you to put this question to government. What is being done by government regarding those victims? I promise you, the Barrow municipality, MoMA, is not doing much to maintain that. I'm not even sure if there is any conduct of any nature whatsoever regarding those people. And those families are still failing. The other one, say, on the maintenance, so return on investment. What guides the department to charge MPs in their residences so low an amount? This is a follow-up on your response that you charge, you know, in such a manner that you would have money for maintaining, you know, your assets. Why is it that it's only just over 200 cents? Does it actually meet your requirements? Or maybe I should be specific, because I'm asking a finance person again. When you balance the cost of maintaining the houses we live in as MPs, vis-a-vis the amount of money, the 207 rands per month, does it make financial sense? I know that I may not be the most popular MP after today, but this is a question I am obligated to put and would like to have a solid answer to it. I think this is all. Thank you. Thank you. Honourable Member,
thanks, Chair. Honourable Members, once more, the first question was what about the, when you talk about the improvements in the properties in Texas, what about the rural municipalities? I think this is a pro forma. We are running a project to confirm the charges of rooms of all municipalities to govern the Akun society indicated earlier on. And we are looking at all municipalities basically to ensure that we support the system in being able to crystallize these amounts so that we can pay them as a matter of urgency. Like I said, the project is meant to come to an end or be concluded very soon. For us to be able to then determine what it is that we have to pay municipalities. I think generally there's just the, you know, municipalities, building systems, there's problems, and I think that can even be worse, especially with rural municipalities, as opposed to the metros that the you know, effort systems. I think it's something that Treasury is looking at. I'm aware that there's been an intervention that Treasury tried to roll out with respect to this matter, utilizing the services of the DBSA to assist municipalities in going around the or dealing with the problem. So I show those improvements we'll see. Why are we saying there's an improvement in the current year? Well, because we paid a considerable amount of real property rates and taxes that we're owing going back many years, and hence the improvement in terms of payments when you compare this quarter and the previous year's quarter, that most of those invoices were verified. There's 99% rounding of error but number picked up that air bubbles up to 99% was like 43, and that 1% could actually be a lot of money when you look at the size of what you're talking about. It is a rounding of error in terms of the percentage calculation, honorable member, and it's just running off in terms of you say 23.4% or you say 23 and cut off 0.4. And if you cut off all the proposed going all the way, you end up with 1% and disappearing away. And I think that's the reason that's happened. Have we included the invoice tracking system on slide 38, I think, in the 16% in terms of the machinery and equipment? Not necessarily, because the invoice tracking system that we can utilize for the main boat, that we are going to be utilizing a system that a user system that Specs is using, and we are going to be using it at no cost to ourselves besides our own product. We're not going to buy the system per se, invoice tracking system. That item related to what we would need to procure if we're going to appoint people with the machinery and equipment, the tools of trade, to be able to provide the people with the equipment to do their work. And that's the expenditure there. There's a question around our I think on slide 62. The question was, what have been the outcomes with respect to meetings with the class? I think we're getting closer to understanding what the real problems are of non-payment. And the times they're going to come up and tell us clearly what it is they need from us to be able to, you know, assist them to release the payments. Now that's getting clearer. I think it's always been, you know, people sitting at different corners and screaming at each other, not actually listening to each other. Now that has given us an opportunity. Now we know. They've clearly indicated, well, this one we need us, and it's up to us to go back and gather the information and so on. And the interventions with National Treasury. Remember, Treasury is the one who mediates when it comes to the monies around cross government. So there's challenges where we are owed monies that relate many years going back. And those monies will be in the bank allocations. If they're not spent, they'll go back to the National Fiscus. Now, we want to claim that money back. So we need the Treasury to assist us and be part of the process of engagement to be able to get the money. Over and above that, they also should assist us in giving out the necessary instructions for us to be able to get the money. We need to be working with that to get the money. So the engagement is not just limited to one thing. There's a whole broad objective in what we are trying to achieve, because they also want to see us being able to retrieve the monies and PMT become self-sustaining in a very short period. That's the intent. What have we done with the issue around the lack of supporting documentation, lease agreements? I think we reported in the past that it's in the public domain that our leasing environment has been highly problematic. We introduced targeted interventions to deal with this, to review the leases, to look at the business process and all that. Over and above that, we also approached Treasury to assist us by providing us some kind of relief in terms of the process of sorting out our leases to renew and get into lease agreements. So those things that we've done has managed to, if you look at the Treasury dispensation, for us to engage and negotiate leases that have expired, it has managed to get us to be able to get these agreements on hand, fresh from the clients, from the landlord. We have gone through a number of interventions, as I said, at least, and today I can report that of the 2,780 leases that we have, we have substantiated all these agreements in our possession. So this is a historical issue which we have to deal with in terms of those amounts that are fully related to disputes by clients that were no lease agreements. Those are factors that I believe we can all relate. So National Treasury Disposition, which I spoke about, is allowing us to extend the new leases through a negotiated process. If at all particular conditions are met, the practice in the building, not intending to leave, Landlord is also prepared to continue leasing us, kept the escalation of those, also kept the period under which you can extend the lease time. In that way, we managed to get these agreements that we need to support the payment. So that's, like I said, a historical problem, and not into the future. About vending.
I think we have noted this issue. However, I think these work rates to us today a legacy matter. Remember, policy has changed over time. The memorial rates are a mandate of the Department of Personal Care when they are in the defense environment, and there are veterans plays a role. The only and we then implement on their behalf. Then recently we just opened one in Mozambique, the Amadola, and there are others that are being constructed elsewhere in Africa. What we can do is we can find out from them whether they have any plan for that. Now that hardware and password is infected. Thank you. I just cannot remember you seem to remember the answer. we have done the calculations about the extent of the cover, because the maintenance is not it's unable. There are times when we spend a lot of money in the villages, for example, than other times. Really, we spend out of the appropriated money. That revenue comes in and goes back to National Treasury. As to whether it means that, really, I can't lie, we have not done that calculation.
Thank you. It seems that we have traversed as far as we can down this road today. Now, being the poorest chairperson in Parliament, unfortunately I can't provide you with lunch. Meeting adjourned, thank you very much. Members, just a minute to adopt the past minutes. You were given a list of minutes. Can we go through those minutes?